everyone. I'm Dr. Leslie Kernison, board-certified geriatrician and the founder of the website betterhealthwhileaging.net. And this is the Better Health While Aging video podcast, where we discuss common health problems that affect people over age 60 and the best ways to prevent and manage those problems. In today's episode, I want to review the basics of the most common chronic condition that affects older adults. It affects an estimated 70% or more of older adults, and that is high blood pressure, also known as hypertension. So this is a really common condition, and since it's so common, and also so common for older adults to be taking medication for it, I'm going to do a little series of episodes so that if you have high blood pressure, or you might have it, or if you're taking care of somebody who has it, you can understand this condition better. And so in this particular first episode, I'm going to start by covering really the basics of blood pressure, including what it means to have normal blood pressure versus high blood pressure, how we define hypertension, why we want to treat it. And then in an upcoming video, I'll go in depth into how we might treat high blood pressure or otherwise help people lower their blood pressure. And I'll also probably do a different episode on low blood pressure itself, since that also comes up in geriatrics as well. So specifically in this video, I'm going to start by covering what is normal blood pressure, sometimes abbreviated BP, versus high blood pressure in older adults. I'm going to talk about how hypertension is defined and how we measure blood pressure when we're trying to diagnose hypertension. I'm going to talk about what causes high blood pressure, what are the signs and symptoms of hypertension, why it's bad for your health, how high is too high when it comes to blood pressure and when to treat. And then I also want to talk a little bit about what the guidelines say we should aim for when it comes to blood pressure and the idea of goal blood pressure if you're treating aging adults. And then I'm going to finish with some suggestions on what to do if you are concerned about blood pressure. So let's get started and talk about blood pressure. But before I get into that, I have a very quick request, which is that if you are here and you find this topic interesting, or you've been finding my videos interesting, if you haven't subscribed yet, could you please go ahead and subscribe? It would just mean a lot to me. And it really helps me out when people subscribe. It helps other people find the channel and it helps support the work that I'm doing. Thank you so much. Okay. Moving on again. So let's get started. So what exactly is blood pressure, right? You know, when we talk about high blood pressure or normal blood pressure, what are we referring to? So blood pressure is essentially a measurement of the force of your blood pushing against the walls of your artery. So our body depends on blood circulating throughout the body to bring us oxygen and nutrients and carry away the waste products of the cells. And so your heart is a pump. And every time it beats, it gives a big squeeze, and it pushes out a jet of blood into first the very big artery attached to the heart, which is the aorta, which splits into lots of smaller arteries. And so in the body, arteries are the blood vessels that carry oxygenated blood, and veins are the ones that bring the blood back to the lungs and the heart. So every time the heart squeezes, there's a big push, and that generates a pressure against the walls of the arteries. So this force is generated by the heart's pumping function, but the pressure is also related to how elastic the artery walls are. So especially when we are younger and healthier, your blood vessels are meant to have a little stretch to it. But as people get older or due to certain health conditions, those artery walls can get stiffer, especially if people have accumulated plaque, for instance, on their walls or a lot of inflammation. And so that is something that will affect the pressure. So just as if you slam your hand into a bouncy wall, you're going to feel less force on your hand. Whereas if you slam it into something that doesn't give, that is going to generate more pressure and more force. And then we measure two types of blood pressure. So first of all, we measure systolic blood pressure. That is the top number that you will see with blood pressure. Blood pressure is usually shown as one number over another number. So systolic is when your heart squeezes, because that moment in the heartbeat is called systole. So when it squeezes, there's a big burst of blood out, and that is the higher blood pressure because the heart has just forcefully squeezed. And then diastolic is the number when your heart relaxes, because when the heart relaxes, the pressure within your arteries does not go down to zero, which is good. Otherwise, we might pass out, right? So it does go down a certain amount. And so that is what we call diastolic blood pressure. And so what is normal blood pressure? So for quite a while now, it has been considered that normal, also known as optimal, blood pressure should be a systolic that is less than 120 millimeters of mercury, and a diastolic that is less than 80 millimeters of mercury. Now, you may be wondering, what is that unit millimeters of mercury? Well, back in the day when they first started measuring blood pressure, the device that they would use had a column of mercury that would go up or down based on the pressure. And so out of convention, we still use that as the metric and the units for measuring blood pressure. Now, there are a couple of things that I think is useful to know when it comes to understanding blood pressure. So first of all, blood pressure is dynamic by its nature. And by dynamic, I mean that it's constantly fluctuating at least a little bit. And so first of all, you know, every moment, you know, when your heart squeezes, you have a moment of systolic blood pressure and then it drops down while the heart is relaxed. That's your diastolic blood pressure. So your blood pressure is kind of going between those. But also every time your heart beats, it's not going to hit the exact same pressure with every beat. So it's normal that there's a little bit of variation going on. And then your blood pressure also does vary throughout the day, depending on a number of factors. So for instance, exercise. So first of all, at the moment you start to exercise, your body will generally try to raise your blood pressure. And it is doing that because it recognizes that you're exerting yourself and it wants to get the blood further out to your muscles and basically gear up for whatever you're doing, whether that is, you know, cardio for your fitness or running away from a lion or tiger. Your blood pressure is also influenced throughout the day by your emotional state. Being stressed out tends to raise blood pressure, whereas if we're in a nice relaxed mode, that tends to lower blood pressure. And then blood pressure will also be influenced by your body position, especially as we get older, that can affect blood pressure. And there are other aspects of our health that will also affect blood pressure. So for instance, people who exercise regularly, that tends to affect their blood pressure over the longer term. But it's important to just realize that the blood pressure that is measured at a given moment, that's not the pressure that you're at every moment of that day. So how does your body achieve these adjustments in blood pressure? So your body is designed to accommodate the fact that you're going through different circumstances throughout your day, throughout your life. And so it has lots of mechanisms to recognize what's going on and adjust things accordingly, either to maintain a reasonably stable blood pressure or to bring the blood pressure up or down, depending on what it perceives are your body's needs. And the body does this through an elaborate system of sensors, of hormones, of regulating your heart function, how quickly your heart beats or how hard it beats. Your kidneys are also intimately involved in managing blood pressure. They're constantly kind of sampling what's going on with pressure and in the blood and making adjustments. And then you also have what we call autonomic reflexes. So reflexes related to your autonomic nervous system. So your sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight response that tends to rev things up. And parasympathetic is rest and digest, tends to calm things down. And that also will affect your blood pressure as well. So that's how blood pressure works in general terms. So what does it mean in that case to have high blood pressure? So high blood pressure means that the blood pressure is higher than would be optimal or expected for a person, especially when they are at rest. And the medical name for this is hypertension. It is, as I mentioned, by far the most common chronic condition in adults. And it's a really important condition for us to notice and manage when it comes to people's health, because what we know is that over the long term, higher than normal blood pressure is associated with a lot of adverse health outcomes. I mean, basically having too much pressure on your arteries or on your organs is not good for them. And in a moment, I'll talk a little bit more about what are the consequences of high blood pressure, why it's bad for you. But for now, what I want to say is that blood pressure does come on a spectrum. And so what we know is that generally the higher people's blood pressure is, especially on average over time, the higher the risk of it affecting their health in bad ways. And so having your blood pressure be a little high for a long time increases your risk by a little bit. Having it be substantially higher than normal for a long time will increase the risk more. So given that, how do we define hypertension? So there's no magic number where if you're 2 points above it, you know, lots of bad things are going to happen. And if you're 2 points below, you're fine. Again, this is kind of a spectrum. But we do have experts who, you know, especially in cardiology, who study this and who define hypertension for us as a medical profession. In the United States, it is especially the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology who do this. And so they just updated their guidelines in 2017. And so as of 2017, the way they define hypertension is that they say that stage 1 hypertension is a systolic blood pressure of 130 to 139 millimeters of mercury, or a diastolic of 80 to 89. And then they say that stage two hypertension is a systolic over 140 or a diastolic over 90. Now, you may have heard that, oh, I thought that high blood pressure was a systolic over 140. That is the previous definition. So for a long time, the guidelines actually identified hypertension as starting at a systolic of 140 and above, and the 130s was considered pre-hypertension. But in 2017, these experts decided to be a little bit, I think, more proactive about addressing blood pressure, and they decided to define hypertension as starting at 130 systolic. However, this was kind of their judgment call. Now, when considering these definitions, it's important to note that this presumes that the measurement technique is accurate. In a little bit, I'm going to describe what it looks like to accurately measure blood pressure, because if you do it in too much of a rush or with the wrong positions, you can get a number that often is too high or potentially might be too low. Another thing you may be wondering is, well, what is normal blood pressure and what is hypertension depending on your age, or is it different for men and women? And the answer is that these ranges apply to all ages and all genders. So today, no matter how old you are, normal blood pressure is considered to be a systolic of less than 120. And that is also a change. So many decades ago, because as people get older, their blood pressure goes up, it was considered normal for people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s to have systolic blood pressures in the 150s or in the 160s or even higher. But even though it's now very common for people to end up there, especially if they are not treated, it is no longer considered normal. And so the blood pressure, normal blood pressure for somebody who is 40, the normal range is the same if they are in their 80s. So that is how we are currently defining hypertension in the United States. However, I did want to share that not everybody agrees with this definition of hypertension. So for instance, in Europe, there is a European Society of Hypertension full of experts who also study this very closely. They actually just released guidelines relatively recently in 2024. And their guidelines are a little different. They reviewed all the same research that, or much of the same research, I should say, they're doing it a little bit later, as the US authorities, but they decided to still define hypertension as a systolic of 140. Starting at a systolic of 140 instead of starting at a systolic of 130. Now, are the consequences of having a systolic blood pressure of 135 different if you are in Europe versus the United States? No. You know, either way, you would be at a little bit more risk than if your systolic blood pressure were less than 120. But, you know, different expert groups create a cutoff at different spots is essentially what I'm sharing. And there are a few other things that I think can be good to keep in mind when we talk about defining hypertension. So you should also know that people who are taking blood pressure medication are usually defined as having treated hypertension, even if their blood pressure is in the normal range. If their blood pressure is in the normal range, that's great. That means the treatment is very successful, but we also still consider them as having hypertension. And then again, currently US and European experts have chosen to define the cutoff for hypertension slightly differently. All definitions presume that you are accurately measuring blood pressure. And then another thing that can be a little bit interesting to know is that hypertension can also be defined differently based on where the blood pressure is measured. Now, often people are getting their blood pressure measured in the office, in a medical clinic, in what we call the ambulatory outpatient setting. However, it can also be measured in other places. So specifically, it can be measured at home with a home blood pressure monitor, or it can be measured through something that is called ambulatory blood pressure monitoring. So that is not to be confused with checking it in the medical clinic, but that is when people get a special 24-hour blood pressure monitor that they wear the whole day, and it checks their blood pressure every half hour during the day, every hour during the night, so that you kind of find out what it is all the time. And that is called ambulatory blood pressure monitoring. And there are some different cutoffs for measuring hypertension if those other types of measurements are used. And let me see if I can show that to you. So this is a table from UpToDate, a very commonly used clinical resource for medical providers in the United States. And so here you can see that they define hypertension based on blood pressure measurement strategy. So if you're in the clinic, U.S. guidelines, American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association. Hypertension is greater than 130 over 80. In Europe, greater than 140 over 90. SMBP means self-measured blood pressure, so a home blood pressure machine. In the United States, same cutoff, 130 over 80, but in Europe, it would be 135 over 85. And that is because people's blood pressure is usually a little lower at home than when they come to the doctor. And then they have some cutoffs for daytime ambulatory blood pressure monitoring and nighttime. So you can see, we expect people's blood pressure to be lower at night. So that is why the cutoff for defining hypertension is lower if you're doing nighttime monitoring than daytime monitoring. And then 24-hour would be an average of the measurements over 24 hours. Now, as I mentioned earlier, if we want to be precise when it comes to blood pressure, it is important to make efforts to get a good, accurate measurement. So here is what is generally recommended for that, especially when it is done in the medical office. So first, you want the person to relax quietly. It's recommended that they be seated in a chair for 5 minutes. They should avoid caffeine, exercise, smoking for 30 minutes prior. They should empty their bladder. They should not be talking during the measurements. Then you want to support the arm at chest level. That's why often they put the person's arm on a table, or sometimes there's a little stand with the blood pressure machine to hold up their arm. You want to use a correctly sized blood pressure cuff. So in particular, if the person has a very big arm, they probably need a larger cuff than usual. Or if they have a very thin arm, you need to get a smaller cuff. Because if the cuff is too big or too small relative to the circumference of the person's arm, you get a blood pressure number that is artificially too low or too high. Then ideally, it's recommended to check blood pressure in both arms and use the arm with the higher reading. That's rarely done, but that would be the ideal. And then what's recommended is to measure the blood pressure 2 or 3 times in one sitting with a break of 1 to 2 minutes between readings. And then you want to average the readings. Lastly, especially if you are diagnosing high blood pressure for the first time, you would ideally measure on at least 2 separate occasions. Now, if you're watching, you may be wondering, well, how often has my blood pressure been measured in this way? And the answer for many people is not so often, because unless a blood pressure research study is being done, blood pressure in medical clinics is often measured in a pretty quick way. People are not usually given 5 minutes to sit and relax, you know, alone in a room. And so with the rushing, generally blood pressure can be a little bit higher than it would otherwise be. So for me, one way to get around this, so first of all, it's important to note that people's blood pressure might be a little higher when it's conventionally measured than it otherwise would be. But another way to get around this is to encourage people to get a good home blood pressure machine and measure at home over several days. You generally want to do this at the same time every day, because more measurements will give you a more accurate view on what a person's blood pressure is generally like. And that's better information for us to work with as we think about, you know, making a diagnosis of hypertension or checking to see if medications or another treatment strategy is working as we expect it to. Let's now talk about what causes high blood pressure. Why does this happen? So most high blood pressure is what we call primary hypertension. It's also called essential hypertension. And that means that it's not being caused by a particular different disease or condition in the body. And so what causes primary hypertension? Well, what we know is that common causes and risk factors include these. So first of all, advancing age. And this is in part because as we get older, our blood vessels tend to get stiffer. The body just gets stiffer and less supple and resilient in general. And then especially if people have experienced inflammation, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, that tends to thicken and stiffen the artery walls as well. Another common risk factor would be obesity. People who are heavier tend to have higher blood pressure. And then there's genetics and family history. There are people who are pretty slim, seem quite healthy, exercise a lot, and they still, for whatever reason, tend to have higher blood pressure than one would expect. So genetics definitely does seem to play a role. Other factors that have been identified include high sodium intake, and that affects some people more than others. But for some people, the amount of sodium that they take in really does make a difference. Higher alcohol intake tends to increase blood pressure as well. Physical inactivity is also associated with higher blood pressure. Insufficient sleep can also raise blood pressure. Social stressors, not just having a stressful day, but some people live very stressful lives. They may be chronically worried about money or about personal safety if they don't live in a safe area. They may be very stressed out by some kind of caregiving situation or something else. that could do it as well. And then noise and air pollution have also been linked to high blood pressure. So those are the most common causes and risk factors for primary hypertension. And then there is secondary hypertension, which means that the high blood pressure is due to something else, such as medications, drugs, or certain medical conditions. So for instance, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, you know, which include ibuprofen, right? These are common over-the-counter painkillers. They also come in prescription strength forms. Those raise blood pressure. So do medications that are stimulants, that are steroids. There are lots of medications that can actually raise blood pressure. Then there are drugs such as cocaine or amphetamines. Those will raise blood pressure. There is kidney disease. If people have kidney disease, the kidneys are very involved in regulating blood pressure. So once people develop chronic kidney disease or sometimes even sudden kidney disease, that can affect their blood pressure and cause high blood pressure. Sleep apnea is another condition that can cause or worsen blood pressure. And then people can sometimes have hormonal imbalances, sometimes related to tumors or other factors in the body. So when blood pressure is high, what are the signs and symptoms? Well, it turns out that hypertension usually causes no obvious symptoms. This is part of why it has been nicknamed the silent killer. People can be walking around with their systolic blood pressure 160, 170, even 180, and often feel perfectly fine. However, sometimes when the blood pressure is very high, such as over 180 systolic or over 120 diastolic, people do sometimes experience symptoms. Now, in my experience, the symptoms are coming on, you know, in most people when they're closer to 200, 210, but you never know. And so when people do get symptoms, those can include things like headache, sometimes shortness of breath, chest pain, or vision changes. And having high blood pressure like this can be an emergency. So if you ever notice that you or someone else is having high blood pressure in this range above a systolic of 180 or diastolic of 120, I definitely recommend seeking urgent medical attention right away, right, to be checked out, especially if you're having symptoms. But even if you're not, it's best to not delay and put off getting looked at for that. Let's now talk about why we treat high blood pressure in the first place. Why is hypertension a bad thing? How bad is it for your health, especially since most of the time people feel fine when their blood pressure is high? Well, people feel fine, but that pressure on your arteries and on your organs is not good for the body, especially when it continues over years and years, which is often the case. So having chronic hypertension has been associated with many serious health problems. Because it is damaging the walls of the body's arteries over time, it can cause a sudden stroke. So a stroke happens when the blood vessels in the brain either get clogged by a clot, and people can have a clot break off from a plaque in an artery when their blood pressure is high, or a blood vessel can burst and start to leak. And that's more likely to happen when blood pressure is high. So high blood pressure is a major risk factor for strokes. But also that high blood pressure does over time damage organs in the body, such as the heart, the kidney, or the brain. And high blood pressure is associated with cardiovascular events and with dying earlier in life. So examples of how organs can be affected is that through high blood pressure, the heart can develop heart failure, or the kidneys can develop kidney disease, or the brain can develop something like vascular dementia. And the higher the blood pressure, the higher the risk of related problems. So we do see a kind of gradual increase in risk. So if your blood pressure is a little higher than optimal for a long time, your risk is a little bit higher. And if your blood pressure is a lot higher than optimal for a long time, your risk is a lot higher. The good news is that treating hypertension has been repeatedly shown in lots of studies to be an effective way to reduce risk. So we are able to bring down people's blood pressure. And in another episode, I'm going to talk about exactly how we do that. But when blood pressure goes down, outcomes generally improve. So now you may be wondering, well, how high is too high for blood pressure and when to treat? So I am going to talk about this more in an upcoming episode, but really briefly, I wanted to touch on this right now. So generally for older adults, we definitely want to be thinking about treating when systolic blood pressure is above 150. And that is because the biggest reduction in health risk comes from getting people who have a systolic blood pressure that is in the 180s down to the level of the 140s, you know, 140 to 150. So we generally want to treat when systolic blood pressure is above 150. And then we often still want to keep treating, but it's going to depend a little bit more on the circumstances of the person. Research has shown that further blood pressure reductions do reduce the risk of bad health outcomes. It's just there's a little bit of diminishing return. So you get the biggest bang for the buck when you get people from like really high, you know, to a little bit above optimal. And then after that, getting closer to optimal, you still get benefits. They're just not as substantial. So how high is too high is going to depend also on the person's age. You know, people who are frail and maybe in their 90s, we're going to treat them differently than somebody who is 65 and who we expect to live for another, you know, 20, 25, 30 years. It's going to depend on health status and on related health conditions. Sometimes people have a condition related to their heart or their kidneys that makes it more important to really get them to a lower, close to normal blood pressure. And then it also is going to depend on whose guidelines are being followed, because it turns out that European guidelines have higher goal blood pressures for older adults. So the guidelines not only define what is normal blood pressure and what is hypertension, but they also make recommendations for when we treat people, where do we want to get them to? What goal should we aim for? And European guidelines do have higher goals. And actually in the United States, there was a time about 15 years ago, where several expert guidelines recommended a higher goal blood pressure for older adults than for younger adults. Now, as of today, as of 2017, the guidelines do not vary based on older age, but they do say, they do recommend reconsidering the goal of a systolic blood pressure less than 130 if the person has limited life expectancy. So in other words, if we're thinking, oh, they might only have a few years left to live, then you can reconsider that goal of less than 130. And that's what the guidelines say right now. So I want to say a few more words about this concept of blood pressure goal, because I think it's actually really important for understanding where your blood pressure might be right now, if you're being treated, or if you start treatment for high blood pressure, you know, understanding where are you trying to get to. So if we want to treat or lower blood pressure, it's good to identify a goal. That means the lower level of blood pressure that we hope to reach through treatment. And what is important to know is that it may or may not be normal blood pressure. It may or may not be a goal of getting to be less than 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury. Actually, what we often do when we start with older adults is we start with an initial goal, see if we can get there, see how the person is feeling, and then we decide whether we want to go lower or not. So I think especially when it comes to older adults, it's important to understand goal blood pressure, because goals can be shifted depending on an older person's age, health conditions, and frailty. So again, U.S. guidelines, especially in the last 10 years, have mostly avoided having a higher goal for older adults. But that is a newer phenomenon. 15 years ago, many major guidelines did actually have a higher goal for older adults. And what really changed that is the result of a very large, well-done trial called SPRINT. And SPRINT was a trial of blood pressure control in older adults. Everybody in there was age 50 or older and was at risk for cardiovascular events. They couldn't have diabetes or dementia, for that matter, or be in a nursing home. But they could be over 50, and they did have a subset that was over 75. And in SPRINT, people were randomized to be treated for blood pressure either targeting less than 120 or less than 140. And what SPRINT found was that it did make a difference in terms of reducing cardiovascular events, strokes, and death to target the lower number. Now, the difference was not enormous, but it was real. It was there. And because of that, ended up, you know, when revised guidelines were issued after that, that really, I think, pushed especially the cardiologists to suggest aiming for that lower blood pressure for people regardless of their age. Now, SPRINT is a great study, very interesting, and I actually talk about it in depth in my related article, which you can see on Better Health While Aging. But one of my takeaways from SPRINT was that, first of all, many people that I take care of were actually excluded from SPRINT. And the other thing is that, as you'll see, if you go into my article when I describe it in depth, the number of people who need to be treated more aggressively, let's say, rather than 140 to prevent a death, prevent a stroke, prevent a cardiovascular event, it was in the range of 60 to 90 people that you need to treat, right? So if you go for the more aggressive treatment, you have, you know, essentially a 1 in 60 chance of avoiding some kind of adverse event because of that. So that's important. But at the same time, you know, a lot of people who go for that more aggressive one are not necessarily going to benefit from that. And so what's interesting is that although U.S. guidelines, you know, ended opting to have the same blood pressure goals for people regardless of age, in Europe, where they did review SPRINT and other studies, when they reissued their guidelines in 2023, they actually still articulated a higher goal. And so here is what the Europeans chose to recommend in their guidelines in 2023. They said that if you are age 18 to 64, target blood pressure should be less than 130 over 80. If you're age 65 to 79, start off by targeting 140 to 80 and then target 130 to 80 if tolerated. So what does that mean if tolerated? That means that you get the person first to the first goal, less than 140 over 80, and then you see, are they having side effects or difficulties with the medication? Are they finding it burdensome to take the level of medication? Are they still doing okay? Do they want to aim for a lower goal? And if they do, then you proceed. And then what was especially interesting to me as a geriatrician is that the European guidelines said that if people are over age 80, they thought it was reasonable to target a blood pressure of less than 140 to 150 over 80. So in case you're wondering, I do personally tend to follow the European approach, and that is in line with what many geriatricians do. This is what we were doing, you know, before SPRINT and before the reissued guidelines. And if you read more about SPRINT in my article, you'll see that many, many frailer people were excluded from SPRINT. So in geriatrics, we're often careful about aggressively treating high blood pressure. I'll talk more about this in future episodes, but you know, people can be overtreated. They can be getting dizzy or lightheaded when they stand up. So it's not that I think it's unreasonable to go for less than 120 over 80, but I certainly think it's good to sort of take it in stages and then decide in collaboration with an older person and their family whether we want to aim for lower or not. So let me now summarize my key points about blood pressure for you. So again, normal or optimal blood pressure is less than 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury. And that is true regardless of people's age or gender. We don't define normal as different anymore if somebody is older versus younger. We might choose different goals for treatment, but normal is still considered to be less than 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury. High blood pressure is very common and becomes much more common as we get older, in part because our arteries tend to become stiffer as we get older. Hypertension right now is currently defined in the United States as a systolic blood pressure greater than 130 or a diastolic blood pressure greater than 80. However, in Europe, they are still choosing to define hypertension as a blood pressure greater than 140 over 90. Accurate measurement of blood pressure is essential before diagnosing somebody with high blood pressure and is also really relevant to following up on treatment and on monitoring. High blood pressure in most cases does not cause any symptoms. Most people feel totally fine until they start to get some kind of consequence, you know, related to chronic organ damage or maybe something even more dramatic, such as a stroke. However, when blood pressure is very, very high, especially once it gets above 180 to 120, especially once it starts getting in like a systolic of 200, some people will have symptoms such as headache or other symptoms. Otherwise, that chronic high blood pressure is associated with many health problems because it does exert a lot of wear and tear on your arteries and on your organs. But treating high blood pressure has been shown to reduce these risks within a time frame that is really pretty small. I mean, we see a difference within even a year or two, including reduced risk of stroke and cardiovascular events. High blood pressure should be treated to get older adults to at least less than a systolic of 150, ideally. And then after that, you can potentially aim for lower. The actual goal blood pressure to target depends on the person's age, their health status, their other related health conditions, and also which guidelines you want to follow. Because again, right now, U.S. guidelines recommend targeting a systolic blood pressure less than 130 for all ages, but European guidelines currently allow for higher goals for older adults, specifically for adults age 80 plus. They suggest a target blood pressure that is essentially in the 140s, you know, less than 140 to 150 is what they say. So before I wrap up, I just want to talk a little bit about what I think you should do if you are concerned about high blood pressure in yourself or in a family member. So first step is to get your blood pressure accurately measured. It's really important to know what are we talking about. And for that, what I recommend is getting a good home blood pressure machine. An automated machine that has an arm cuff is what is better. That is the most accurate place to measure blood pressure. I know some machines do it on the wrist or even on the finger. It sounds very convenient, but it's really probably not as accurate. So next is to gather enough blood pressure measurements. And I suggest checking daily for a week at the same time. And you want to try to use, again, that good technique. Sit down, prop your arm up on a table, relax, you know, for 5 minutes before. When you write down your blood pressure measurements, you want to also write down the heart rate. It's very important to help us interpret somebody's blood pressure. Every now and then somebody brings me a list of blood pressures with no heart rates, and it's actually like really hard. So be sure to note the pulse as well. And then get your blood pressure checked at your health provider's office. So again, you know, try to encourage them to use good technique, meaning, you know, let you relax for 5 minutes, you know, rest, maybe take a few measurements and average them. Speaking of taking a few measurements and averaging them, there are a number of home blood pressure machines that will do this. It's sometimes called a true read feature, where it'll check you 3 times in a row with a little like break in between. And then you want to compare the numbers that you're getting in the doctor's office to the numbers at home. Now, if you bring your home machine into the office, that can be good to make sure that your machine generally gets the same number as the office. Now, in most cases, people's blood pressure is a little higher in the doctor's office than at home, but your home machine should read higher at the doctor's office and should be giving you something pretty similar to what the doctor's machine is doing. If there's a big discrepancy between the two machines in the office, then you have to have your home machine recalibrated. If there's a big difference between your home readings and the office readings, then maybe we are dealing with something that's called white coat hypertension, where people really have much higher blood pressure when they're at their doctor's office. And that's important to take note. And then once you have, you know, some accurate information on how your blood pressure is, then you want to kind of like review where you're at and make a plan. So if you have been treated for high blood pressure already, you have medications and a treatment plan, you kind of want to review like, well, what have we been doing, right? Or what have we tried in the past? How is that going? And you want to talk with your health provider. You know, I highly recommend asking them, what goal blood pressure do you think is right for me right now and why? And then talk about, so what can we do to get my blood pressure lower? And I'll talk more about this in an upcoming episode, but you know, there is more to consider than just medications. But you want to be discussing that with your health provider, and you want to make a plan to make some adjustments to the treatment plan. And then you also want to have a plan to monitor blood pressure to see how it responds to the revised treatment. Usually if we change somebody's blood pressure treatment plan and they actually implement it, we should see a difference in blood pressure pretty quickly, within, you know, really like a week, you would see a difference. So you want to make a plan with your provider to follow up on that. So I'll stop there. And again, I'll talk more about treatment in an upcoming episode, but for now, I'll stop right there. And so with that, thank you so much for watching this. I hope you found it helpful. If you found this video podcast helpful, if you're here on YouTube, please go ahead and subscribe. It really does help more people find the channel. If you've been listening to the audio version on the podcast feed, please come and take a look at the video if you get a chance, if you want to see my key points being displayed on the screen. So thank you once again, and I look forward to seeing you all again on a future episode of the Better Health While Aging video podcast.